Welcome to the U.S. Law Essentials Law and Language Podcast, the legal English podcast for non-native English speakers that helps you improve your English listening, improve your legal English vocabulary, and build your knowledge of American legal culture.
Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention.
Hi, and welcome to the U.S. Law Essentials Law and Language Podcast. I'm Stephen Horowitz.
I'm Dan Edelson.
And today's episode is part of our What's New in the Legal News series, where one of us picks a legal news event to talk about. Today, it's Dan's turn. So, Dan, what'd you pick for us today?
Okay, I have a recent Supreme Court decision called Edwards v. Vannoy. You got it?
Yeah, Vannoy?
Vannoy.
Are you sure it's not Van Noy?
No, I'm not. The reason why I'm not sure is if you read the caption, everything in U.S. case captions are in all capitals. So I know it's V-A-N-N-O-Y, but I'm not sure if the first letter is capitalized and everything else after that is lowercase, or if it's different, and I haven't checked.
Oh, I had on my favorite football team, the Detroit Lions, there used to be a player named Kyle Van Noy, and on his uniform, it was a capital V, and then the second N was also capitalized. So Van Noy, like two words. So I wonder if this one's Van Noy. Do you think that's going to affect the outcome of the case?
It didn't. as far as I know. Okay, so Steve, I want you to use your imagination for a second, okay?
Okay, I can do that.
Good. All right. Now imagine that you are in prison.
Ah, okay. Okay. I'm with you.
All right. Not with me. But and there's somebody else in a prison cell right next to you.
Okay.
Okay. So far, so good?
Yeah. So I'm in prison. There's somebody next to me in the next cell.
Okay. Now, you've both been convicted of crimes, and you were both convicted by juries by a 10 to 2 vote. So it wasn't unanimous. 10 people said you were guilty. 2 people said you were not guilty. But in your state, that was enough, and you got convicted. So far, so good?
So I just happen to live in a state where the law is different, and it doesn't have to be unanimous? It doesn't have to be 12 to 0?
Right, you know, and this is true. There were a couple states like that in the United States. So say it again.
I saw the movie 12 Angry Men, and I remember they're all pressuring that one guy to change his to vote with them because they need a unanimous decision. So I thought that's what it is throughout the United States.
It's not. So, for example, in this movie, the entire movie could have been very short because it could have been 11 angry men, 1 disappointed man, and the guy still would have been guilty. But
yeah, that would not have been that movie would not have been as entertaining.
It would have been a terrible movie. So you're in the state, you don't need a unanimous jury verdict, right? You just need 10 to 2. So far, so good, or not so good?
Got it.
Now, the gentleman next to you, same situation. He was also convicted, 10 to 2. Got it?
Okay.
All right. One day he wakes up and he says, "Woohoo! I have to get my conviction overturned because of a recent Supreme Court decision, Ramos v. Louisiana." And he says he is going to get out of prison because his conviction has to be overturned because that jury verdict was not unanimous. So far, so good?
Okay. I think this is good news for me in my prison cell, but keep going.
Right. So you're celebrating and you're saying, "Oh, good. This must be good news for me too," right?
Yeah.
But then Edwards v. Vannoy comes along. And your friend, his conviction was overturned. Yours wasn't. How do you like that?
Wait. His conviction was overturned.
Yep.
And then after that, not Kyle Van Noy, that's the football player, the Edwards versus Vannoy case was decided, and now suddenly I can't get the same treatment as my next door neighbor.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
So what happened in this case?
Okay. So go back to 2020, which is only a year ago. So in 2020, only 1 year before the Edwards v. Vannoy decision, the Supreme Court decided that jury verdicts in criminal cases must be unanimous. So if it's a serious crime, like, you know, murder, something like that, it has to be a 12-0 unanimous jury verdict. 10-2 verdicts are unconstitutional. And those convictions have to be overturned. That's why your friend was celebrating, right?
Yeah.
And that's why you would celebrate, right?
Yeah.
But then Edwards v. Vannoy came along and said, but wait. That rule does not apply retroactively to people whose cases are already over. So if you have a pending appeal, so you've been convicted in a trial court, and you have a pending appeal to a state appellate court, Ramos v. Louisiana helps you. Your conviction has to be overturned. And that's why your friend was happy. But your situation was different. You already went through all your appeals. You finished all your state court appeals. Yeah?
So just because my neighbor had a pending appeal, meaning he had an appeal that was in process, or the process was not yet complete, and a court hadn't made a decision, but I've already done that, and I don't have any more appeals left, I don't get the benefit of the Ramos case.
Right. So Edwards v. Vannoy says Ramos does not apply retroactively to people who have already exhausted their state court appeals process.
Well, this is kind of interesting, because it sounds like the Ramos case, the court was saying we want to help people who had a situation where it wasn't unanimous. And then the court a year later says, well, but we don't really want to help you.
Right. Now, obviously the justices wouldn't put it in those terms. The terms they would put it in, and we're both lawyers, I guess we have to put this in sort of legal terms, would be that when there is a procedural change based on this Supreme Court decision, it doesn't apply retroactively. And a unanimous jury verdict, that's considered a procedural change, because it's a change in the process of how you get convicted. It's not a change in the actual criminal law. It's a change in the process as to how you're found guilty.
Wow, but that procedural aspect feels very substantive to me sitting in my jail cell.
Doesn't it? And that's part of what the dissent was saying. Because the rule is, even that procedural change, if it's considered a watershed change, like a huge, major procedural change, yeah, in those circumstances, it can apply retroactively. The problem is, that's never happened. And the Supreme Court has never said, oh, we're going to apply this kind of procedural change retroactively. So the majority on the Supreme Court said, yeah, Ramos v. Louisiana, that's a procedural change. Now all jury verdicts have to be unanimous. But if you've already gone through your appellate process in state court, a federal court's not going to help you. So that's your bad news.
Wow, it feels like the Supreme Court's view of the law is, even if there were some bad decisions made in the past, we don't want to undo things. We don't want to undo everything. We want to let everything kind of stay the way it is, just because it's easier that way.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think what you're saying is a fair criticism, actually. And I think that's consistent with what the dissent's criticism was. Just on the, you know, you hand out you know, with one hand, you hand out this hope, right? And this person in the prison cell right next to you is able to rely on this decision and will actually get his conviction overturned. And here you are right next to him. And it's the criticism would be, well, now with the other hand, the Supreme Court just took away your hope.
Wait, there's a dissent?
Absolutely. The same justices who were quite supportive of the Ramos v. Louisiana decision are dissenting vehemently in this decision.
And by any chance, were there three justices voting to dissent?
How are you guessing that there must be three justices dissenting? Is this some sort of psychic power that you have?
Not a psychic power. It's just knowing that the current makeup of the Supreme Court is six very conservative justices and three more progressive or liberal justices.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. So there was in fact three justices dissenting, and you accurately identified that they are traditionally considered to be more progressive or liberal than the other justices. And I think you could say they give a full-throated response. They give a vehement response in the dissent, which is written by Justice Kagan.
So Dan, it seems like they're making this distinction between procedural and substantive, but then they also talk about, you had mentioned that there's procedural and you can do something about it, and procedural and you can't do something about it.
Right. And you usually can't.
Yeah. It sounds like you generally can't, but they must have some rationale or some sort of factors that you have to consider to determine that something meets one, you know, that goes one way or the other.
Right. And that's an important point. So you always have to look at, okay, what are the factors, or under what circumstances does it apply retroactively? And the language that this court cites is from a prior Supreme Court case that said the watershed exception is, quote, extremely narrow and applies only when, among other things, the new rule alters our understanding of the bedrock procedural elements essential to the fairness of a proceeding.
So it has to really shake the foundations.
Yeah.
The bedrock is like the rock under the earth that's very thick and doesn't move. So if that gets shaken, then we can think about procedure.
Right. So if that procedural element is so critical, then it can be considered a watershed event, because somehow the underlying trial would have been unfair. And according to the majority, this just doesn't qualify.
Yeah, you know, this to me, from a language perspective, I see another example of a word, a sort of infrequently used word that the court infuses with meaning, that the court sort of puts a lot of meaning into. In this case, it's the word bedrock. A bedrock, what do they say? A bedrock principle?
Right. It's the bedrock procedural elements essential to the fairness of a proceeding.
Yeah. And bedrock is one of those words that, you know, people don't just study that. It's not something that people use in conversation all the time. It's not a particularly complicated or abstract word. And yet courts, especially I think in constitutional law cases, like to use these words. They take these sort of, you know, high-minded words and give them a metaphorical meaning. In Jones versus Mississippi, we talked about incorrigible and incorrigibility, this word that's infrequently used, but that a lot of meaning gets sort of inserted into.
That's a good point. And so here, some of these words like watershed and bedrock are words that suggest something so momentous. And if it doesn't qualify under those standards, then it just doesn't get that retroactive application.
Yeah. And they're not, words like bedrock and watershed and incorrigible are not necessarily legal English. They don't feel like legal English. And yet they're a big part of legal English.
I think that's a good point, where some of these really, really key words can make their way into legal English to have some sort of colorful impact. So I was thinking that if you had a contract dispute and you wanted to allege in court that your adversary breached the contract in such a material way, you might want to say that the breach has undercut the very bedrock purpose of the contract or something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good example. So as we go forward with these podcasts and look at different cases and other news events, I think we'll keep an eye out for these kinds of infrequently used words that the law likes to hang a lot of hats on or put a lot of weight into.
Good point. Good point. All right. Well, I enjoyed talking about this case with you.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. That was a really great summary, and I learned a lot from it as well. Can I get out of my prison cell now?
Sure you can. But first, you have to remind everyone that they should subscribe to our podcast and get on our mailing list so we can keep them updated.
I think you just did that.
Okay. Well, you're out of prison then.
Yes. Okay. Good lawyer. Thanks.
No worries. All right. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thanks, Dan.
Talk soon. Bye now.
Bye.